Hi, my name is Kurt Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. So this is the investing vehicle I fund first every year. The first week of January, I make sure I fully fund it. So what is it? It's the health savings account, or the HSA account. Now, you might be using an FSA account through work, which is a flexible spending account. Most people I run into are using an FSA and they confuse it with the HSA. Now, the FSA has been around a lot longer than the HSA. And because you have the FSA and HSA, people confuse it, but they're very different. The flexible spending account is great. You put money into an account pre-tax, so you're not taxed on your earnings, but then you have to use that money on medical expenses that year. So if you put $1,500 into your FSA account, you have to use $1,500 on medical expenses during the year or you lose it. Now, the HSA is similar to the FSA in that you're putting money into an account pre-tax. The big difference here is you don't have to pull that money out during the year. It can roll over to future years. In fact, the HSA is really kind of like a medical individual retirement account or medical IRA. What the government wants you to do is to save money in these accounts so that when you retire, you've got money there for medical. So the HSA is truly the only tax-free vehicle in the entire U.S. tax code. You get a tax break when you put money in, and then it grows tax-free so long as when you eventually pull it out, you use it for medical. So you might be wondering, why don't more people use a health savings account? What I find is you have to use a high deductible insurance plan, health insurance plan, to be eligible for the HSA account. Most people hate having high deductibles. They don't want to pay their doctor, their dentist, their prescriptions with cash. So they usually pick a plan that has lower co-pays or lower out-of-pocket, even though the higher deductible plans typically have lower monthly premiums. People just hate giving money that they have to hand over to the doctor. But the thing is, you're probably selling yourself short because this is such a powerful tool. And it's especially powerful for people who are younger or if you're not using a lot of medical. You're probably still in a plan that's kind of a Cadillac plan with low out-of-pocket when you could be making so much more money over the long term with the HSA account. So right now there's about 20 million HSA accounts in existence, and that's good. It's good to see that many accounts. But the other thing is not only using an HSA or setting one up is important, but you have to use it effectively. And most people I see aren't using their HSA the correct way. Here's how most people use their HSA. They put money in, and when they put money in, they're not putting in the full annual contribution amount. They might put $1,000, $2,000. They're not putting in the full $6,900 you can put in for a family. So they're not putting in enough, but secondarily, they're using it every single year. So when they have out-of-pocket medical, during the year, they pull it out of their HSA. That means they're not using the most important feature to the HSA account, tax-free growth. So let me give you an idea of how I use the HSA account. Now, I started using them way back in 2004 when they first were authorized by Congress, and I've been using it religiously since then. So what I do is I put in the contribution amount that I can every single year. Again, for 2018, that amount is $6,900 for a family. Put that money in, and then I invest it in stocks, bonds, ETFs, real estate investment trusts, whatever I want, and I'm letting it grow. And then during the year, when we have medical expenses, because I have two kids, they get the sniffles, they needed braces, all of that, I just pay cash for it. I leave the money in my HSA account. So what I'm gonna do by the time I retire is I'm hoping to have a nice little nest egg there. And now I'm gonna have a nice chunk that I can use for medical, because when you get older, when you're 65, 70, 80, you're gonna have more medical. But now I can use tax-free growth to pay for it. But here's the real kicker, and this is where the power is. The medical expense that you're using when you withdraw from an HSA doesn't have to be for the year when you pull the money out. So if I'm age 70 and I pull money out of my HSA, I don't have to have a medical expense for the year that I'm 70. I can use expenses from this year. So I've saved the receipts for my child's braces when they broke their arm, all those little things. I save every medical receipt. So it might be the year 2040 and I can use a receipt from year 2018. I can pull that money out. Long as I have that receipt, I can pull that money out and say it's for medical. This is authorized by the IRS code. So in effect, what I'm doing is I'm creating a situation where I might get tax-free growth, much like you get with a Roth IRA, for expenses that I incurred years before. And now I can use that money for just general living expenses once I'm retired. So it's a fantastic retirement vehicle. And here's the other thing. Even if I don't have medical expenses, I can still pull the money out. I still get tax deferred growth at that point. So it works like an IRA. You pull the money out and you'll pay taxes on the amount you pull out, just like you would with a traditional IRA. But the real power is saving those receipts for the next 30 years. And now I've got a lot of money I can use for retirement savings. So another reason you want to have a balance in your account, you don't want to use it as your expenses pop up during the year. Most of these HSA accounts, they're with banks, and the banks have monthly fees associated with these accounts. Now, oftentimes these fees are waived if you have a certain amount sitting in their cash account. So for instance, the bank I use, it's called HSA Bank. If I have $5,000 sitting in their money market, then I don't pay their $2 monthly fee. So by building up a certain amount of savings, I'm going to avoid any fees on the account. So that adds to your total return if you're not paying fees. And then what I do, just to give you another example of how I use it, once I hit that $5,000 limit in the cash, anything that goes above that, I can move it over to a brokerage account. So with HSA Bank, they tie in with TD Ameritrade. So I move it to TD Ameritrade, I invest in ETFs, I invest in stocks, I invest in bonds, whatever I want to do. So that part is growing longer term. I'm getting longer term growth on my HSA account. So you're starting to see the power of the HSA plan. Hopefully the next time your open enrollment happens, you'll look for an HSA eligible health insurance plan and start to really build your wealth.
So we're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back with more information in just a second. I hope you're enjoying the content so far. I just want to let you know that we're committed to providing you with tons of information. Hopefully it'll be useful to your situation. But check out SavingYourselfFromWallStreet.com, where along with our podcast, you can find written articles, videos, and newsletters, all of it structured to help you take control of your financial life and avoid Wall Street's tactics. Today we're going to look at exactly how Wall Street makes their money. So Wall Street makes their money really in three different ways. The first way is through their investment banking arm. Now, what's an investment bank? Well, essentially, an investment bank raises money for companies. So if Disney was going to put a new theme park in Brazil, they have to raise a certain amount of money, $500 million, a billion. I don't know how much it costs for It's a Small World. Well, anyway, they've got to raise this money. So they go to the investment banks and say, we need $1 billion. So now the investment banks have to go out and raise this capital. The more capital they raise, the bigger their cut. So if you happen to be sitting with your investment advisor or your financial advisor, and the company's trying to raise money for Disney, you might end up with Disney bonds or Disney stocks. Now, it's not to say Disney isn't a good investment, but there's clearly a conflict there. The brokers at the local brokerages are nothing more than a distribution channel for the investment banks. That's where they make a lot of their money. The second way that they make their money is through the mutual fund fees, annuity fees, insurance fees, the commissions. And the way this thing works is it's kind of like your grocery store. When you walk down an aisle of the grocery store, everything that's at eye level, they pay for that. So when you're there and you see Kellogg's and Post and Oreos and all that good stuff, that's they're paying extra so that you're looking right at it. If you want the generic products, you either have to go all the way to the bottom aisle or all the way to the top shelf. So it works the same thing for mutual funds. So if a mutual fund or an annuity wants to raise money, get more investments, then they offer a little extra incentive for the broker to put you in those funds. Now, again, it doesn't mean it's a bad fund or a bad annuity, but there's clearly a conflict there, and you're going to pay higher fees for it. Now, the third way that Wall Street makes their money is the most nefarious. It's called principal trades. Just like you and me, all these Wall Street firms have their own portfolio of stocks and bonds and other investments. So if they decided that they wanted to sell their Disney stock, they think it's overvalued, it's not going to provide a good return, they're going to sell it. But they don't just go out into the open market and place a sell order, because that would bring the price down. Instead, what they do is they actually try to put that Disney stock in their client's portfolio. It can just be a lateral move right in there. And this really came out back in the days when MCI WorldCom and Enron and all these companies went under. What they found is most of these Wall Street firms were putting those company stocks and bonds in their client portfolios literally days before it went under, because they were trying to get it out of their portfolios. So those are the three ways that Wall Street makes their money. First one, investment banking arms. Second is from the mutual funds and annuity companies for shelf space. And then the third one is the principal trade. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast along with other articles and videos at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kurt Kinder. Kurt Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.